Hack the Entrepreneur is part of Rainmaker FM, the digital business podcast network. Find more great shows and education at rainmaker.fm. Thanks again to Amazing.com for sponsoring today's episode. Amazing.com offers proven online courses that can help just about anyone start their own business, from selling products on Amazon to launching the next hot mobile app. They've already helped more than 20,000 people get started. Learn how at Amazing.com or call 888-373-9363.
Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. I'm so very, very happy that you decided to join me again today. Quick preface, the language in this one goes a little further than it does sometimes. So just if there's young ones listening that you would not like to hear it, by all means, you might want to plug their ears or go to the last episode. But this is a conversation that you want to listen to when you don't have them around, because this conversation is awesome and I've been wanting to talk to this guy for a long time. So let's do this. I'm your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a musician, programmer, writer, speaker, introvert, and entrepreneur. I have also been working to get him on this show for just over 1 year now. My guest started out as a professional musician. Then he wanted to sell his own CDs on the internet, but the means to do this did not exist at the time. This was 1998. So his entrepreneurial spirit took over and he decided to create a website to sell his own music, then his friends' music. Then friends of friends were asking to have their music put online on this site as well. And CD Baby was born. CD Baby went on to become the largest online seller of independent music and created $100 million in sales for 150,000 musicians. My guest sold the company in 2008 for $22 million and gave the proceeds to a charitable trust for music education. He has published 34 books, including the brand new Amazon bestseller that I highly, highly recommend you read, called Anything You Want. He is also a frequent speaker at TED conferences, and his talks have had over 5 million views. Now, let's hack Derek Sivers. The official sponsor of today's episode is the Digital Marketing Institute. Visit dmipostgrad.com to download a brochure from the Digital Marketing Institute and find out why studying their postgrad diploma in digital marketing is the perfect way to get ahead in a fast-paced, high-growth industry filled with exciting career opportunities. The Digital Marketing Institute is the leading global provider of digital education and has equipped over 10,000 students across the world with the skills and knowledge they need to excel in the digital industry. Studying online means you can enjoy 24-hour access to video lectures, downloadable support materials, and interactive quizzes. Whether you're using your tablet during your morning commute, your mobile on your lunch break, or at home on your laptop, study wherever you want, whenever you want, and complete the course at a pace that suits you. So whether you want to secure a job, move up in your current organization, or grow your own business, visit dmipostgrad.com. That's dmipostgrad.com to download a brochure for the Digital Marketing Institute's Postgraduate Diploma in Digital Marketing and start realizing your digital career goals. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, 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 very special guest. Someone I've been waiting a year to talk to at this point, and I'm really, really excited for this. Derek, welcome to the show.
Thanks, John. I got four varies in there. That was really cool.
You did. Well, I was going through the emails and it's been a year, and I'm so happy that we got to do this, and I'm just really excited about it. So
well, it's funny, you know, I don't mean to be so elusive, but I've just found that I have modes where I'm more conversational. And sometimes, like if I'm programming, I'm just in my tech head. And if you try to talk to me when I'm in programming mode, I'm just, you know, I'm just a drooling idiot. I'm not very verbal. So I think when you asked me before, I was just kind of in the middle of some other work. And yeah, I finally just a couple of weeks ago lifted my head up and thought, yeah, I'm ready to talk now.
Oh, then it's awesome, because you should do that. And then You're absolutely a man of your word, because you're like, I'll get back to you as soon as I'm back in that headspace. And then randomly, like 6 months later or something, I'm just on my phone. I'm like, there's Derek. He's coming on the show. Awesome. All right, Derek, let's jump straight into this. Can you tell me, Derek, as an entrepreneur, what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
I think reading books. I like to take little facts about life, like reading books about psychology, understanding cognitive biases, how our minds work, the fallacies that we make in the way that we think of things, and understanding a point like this, and then acting on it, you know, thinking, okay, if this is true, what can I do to act on this? I think that leads to a different approach than most. I think a lot of people just kind of look to the outside world, and they look at what somebody rich and famous is doing, and they say, I want to do that too, and they just kind of emulate others, go with the flow. But I think it can be much more interesting to build your life on some like core foundation ideas and extrapolate them from there. So I just realized that that's more of my answer on a personal level, but this is Hack the Entrepreneur. So on the business level, I think the one thing I do that has been the biggest contributor to my success is probably keeping things entirely 100% focused on a service mode to individuals. Like, how can I be of service to this person? I never think in terms of crowds or audience. You know, I just think about individuals. Like, what can I do for this person that will make them happy to open up their wallet and pay me to do this thing that they need? Which, if you're really in that mindset, it's extremely selfless. Like, this has nothing to do with me or what I think I'm offering. It's all about them. And again, them meaning an individual. So it often means just talking to individuals, saying, how can I help? What do you need? It's often letting go of the idea of what you think you're offering, and instead just asking them what they need and being of service to the world, to individuals. And only if multiple individuals have asked for the same thing, then you find a way to turn it into a system, build a business and a system out of it. But before that, I just start with individuals and see what they want to pay for.
Nice. I love it. And so I love your two answers. You have like a personal answer and then sort of the business you answer, but I don't think that they're distinct necessarily. When you said the reading the books and like reading like a psychology book and then taking like facts about life or something and then sort of seeing how it works, it from the outside, it seems like that's what you do with how you're trying to understand, I guess, business at this point and entrepreneurship and then service of the one person.
Well, yeah, I mean, business and personal is very hard for me to separate. I think of the two as so intertwined. It was actually a problem when I was mentoring at a local business school when I was living in Singapore. I was mentoring for INSEAD, which is like an MBA business school. And people would hand me these like 20-page PowerPoint presentations with the kind of pitch deck for their business and say, what do you think? I'd say, well, I don't know. Who are you? Like, what do you want out of life? What makes you happy? What kind of person are you? What are you seeking out of life? I mean, these are all intertwined to me. Like, it's how you shape your business has a lot to do with you and what you want out of life, you know? So in my case, I wasn't even trying to start a business. When I started CD Baby, I was making my full-time living as a musician, and being a professional musician was my dream. I wasn't trying to start a company. In fact, that was an obstacle that was something that was getting in the way of me and my music. So I didn't even want this little hobby to grow. It was something I was doing as a favor to friends, but then it just kept growing. And then friends of friends kept calling and asking me to sell their CD. I'd be like, this thing is taking up hours of my day. This is getting in the way of my music. And so I didn't even want this thing to grow. And that's why I made some of the business choices I made, which was to make this business very utopian and very, you know, decidedly non-growth. What do you call that? It was the opposite of growth hacking. I was hacking the growth with an axe to try to chop it down to keep it from growing, and yet it grew anyway. That's when I realized I had started something the world clearly needed, because I was trying to keep it from growing, and yet it continued to grow. So, but that was a personal choice based on my life and what I wanted out of my life, which was to make music, right? So all of my business decisions were based around that. Whereas if somebody wanted to be the next Richard Branson, they would make very different decisions on what they would do with their business and how they would grow it. You know, it wouldn't be about serving personal individuals one at a time. It would be like, how do I become a billionaire fast, you know?
Right. And I find it interesting because I try and encourage people to think about what they want out of their business, not what they want their business to become, sort of. Like, I don't think I'm saying it right, but I think that you were kind of lifestyle design before lifestyle design was like a term, meaning that you don't just start and work as hard as you can in your business to grow it as big as you possibly can, and then wake up one day realizing that you don't have a life. You just have this massive business that you don't even want to run and you don't control really anymore.
Right. Yeah.
Because you have to be conscious of it, right? And you don't. And I love how your book says, like, it's not about just getting bigger and bigger. It doesn't have to be. It's about what you want. And it should be. Because you're right. Like, business and life are, or should be, intertwined. And therefore, it can really destroy your life.
Yeah. But I'd say careful that, okay, we're talking about two things. One is about your personal happiness and pursuing a lifestyle that makes you happy. And a different thing is pursuing a business and making your business successful. And I think that those are two different pursuits that are often at odds with each other, right? So let's take this idea of people saying, like, I'm trying to find my passion and my calling. Well, or maybe thinking that they're not successful because they're not following their passion. But I think that passion is overrated bullshit. I think it's often used as a lame excuse for not doing what's needed, or a sad justification for doing something that people don't want. I think the success of your business has almost nothing to do with you and what you want and your personal passions and preferences. Get over yourself. Forget yourself. This isn't about you. Your business is about them and their needs, like them meaning the people that are going to pay you to do something. Like, this is, your business is all about them. If you're just talking in terms of what's going to make your business successful, right? So, for example, I did lots of different businesses before CD Baby. I had a recording studio and a 5-piece funk band, and I was a session musician and a solo coffee house artist. I started a record label, and I signed a friend to my record label and released his record. I started a booking agency. I was passionate about all of these things. In fact, each one of them I felt was my calling. I was even an expert in each of these things. But none of that mattered, because none of them were what the world really needed, right? Like, I mean, granted, they weren't complete failures. I mean, I bought a house with the money I made touring. So by some accounts, I was successful. But it was always a big struggle. It was like so much effort for so little reward. But then I started this silly little hobby, like yet another tiny little side project called CD Baby. And it just took off because it's what the world needed. I didn't know that. I mean, you don't know until the world tells you that something you're doing is what they've needed. I mean, it was just an ugly little website with a buy now button that I was just doing to help a few friends, but it just exploded. So yeah, I think, and so you could even say I actually wasn't as passionate about CD Baby as I was the other things I was doing. So this idea that, you know, you need to follow your passion to be successful is bullshit. You need to be selfless, I think, to be successful and do what other people need you to do. And that, by definition, is quite different from designing your life in a way that makes you happy.
I love it. I love it. Was there a point where you sort of consciously realized that you were an entrepreneur? Or is this something now, looking back? Because I know, especially with musicians, right? And like, the touring aspect and like the recording studio, those things are things you're doing out of passion, sort of, and they're what we do, but oftentimes they're at odds with each other, right? The art and commerce sometimes doesn't,
like, yeah.
But some of us really learn to master that and get a hold of it, but we're reluctant in that. So were you, looking back, a reluctant sort of entrepreneur and got sort of pushed into it by your actions? Or is it something that you think you've always sort of had within you?
Well, before I answer that, I just got to tell you, there was a little, I was doing a fun word game with friends recently where I often ask, like, what's the opposite of this? What's the opposite of that? You know, it's fun to just ask, like, what's the opposite of effort? Because it's not no effort. That's like the opposite of one is not zero. The opposite of one is minus one. So what's the opposite of effort? And somebody came up with the answer. It's rejuvenation. I said, ah, good answer. And so I asked, what's the opposite of music? And there were a bunch of answers that were like silence and noise. I was like, no, you know, some people would call noise music and silence is just like the zero. It's not the opposite. And so the best answer came from somebody that said, the opposite of music, business. I like that answer. Anyway, so that said, I think that to be a musician is to be an entrepreneur. So every now and then, especially if I'm speaking at like a business school or something like that, people will say something like, how did you get the courage to quit your job and strike out on your own to start a business? And I just look at them weird. I'm like, what? No. I never had that. Like, I knew from the age of 14 that I wanted to be a musician. And, you know, do you get what that means? That means like no paycheck, no insurance, no pension, no security. Like, I knew I would never have any of that stuff because I was going to be a professional musician. That's like, that is committing to a lifetime of hustling. The idea of working for someone else never even occurred to me. I mean, I only had really just a couple jobs in my life. And last time I had a job was 1992. It's when I quit my last day job. And even the fact that I call it a day job, you know, I mean, that's what musicians call it, a day job. That means it's like the thing you're doing from 9 to 5 just to get some money, because what you really love is the thing you do from 6 p.m. to midnight. Anyway, so yeah, it's when I always knew that I would be living this life where every dollar I would make would just be of my own hands. There would be no paycheck. So that said, so I guess I was already in the entrepreneur mindset, but that said, CD Baby, like I said, was like a hobby that I was just doing as a favor to friends. And I really did think of it as just a giving back to the community. You got to also understand, when I started it in 1997, people weren't making any money on the internet. The internet was like this free, useful service where people would go. It was like bulletin boards and news groups and things like that, where people would share advice and tips with each other for free. And it was more, it felt like a more of a, just a free, useful community. So when I offered to set up something to help my friends sell their CDs, it was just a little free service I was doing to give back to the community. And so when that started to take off and I just started getting more and more calls from strangers saying, like, you know, hey, my friend said you could sell my CD for me. And I'd say, oh yeah, you're a friend of Dave's, I'll hook you up. I was still doing it all as a favor. And I realized that I had accidentally started a business, like it or not. So yeah, that's when I was clearly reluctant to do this thing that was going to get in the way of me and my music. And that's why it's hard for me to relate when people tell me, well, like, people now will ask me questions like, I want to start my own business, but I don't know what to do. What should I do? And I'm like, well, you know, if nobody's asking you to do anything, then the world doesn't need you to do anything for them. You don't do anything unless the world needs you to do it. You know, you don't try to push things onto the world. You just answer calls for help. I don't know. That's been my approach. I can't imagine pushing something on the world that the world is not asking for. So usually my advice to those people is just go develop your skills, like get a job somewhere and just develop your skills until you've got so much skill at doing something that you're now an expert in this thing, or you have a certain in or a certain unfair advantage in some way or a certain resource that people need. And then you'll notice that people are asking for your help to do something, and now you can go serve them.
Yeah, and that's really interesting way of putting it, because this is sort of, with coding, because you were super into the coding of CD Baby, right? And
yeah,
you're still programming.
Yeah, I love programming. Yeah, it became a passion. It was something I had never done it until CD Baby took off. And in fact, when CD Baby started, it was just a little static HTML website. So there was really no programming involved. And only after it took off and I was doing hours of manual copy and paste labor every day, then finally somebody told me about server-side programming and said, you know, if you built a server-side database, you could have all this handled automatically. And I said, oh my God, I need to learn how to do that because I'm spending 4 hours a day doing, you know, Control-C, Alt-Tab, Control-V, Control-C, Alt-Tab, Control-V. I was like copying and pasting information from one place to another for hours a day. And I found out that if I could just learn how to do some programming, the computer could do that for me automatically. That was like the ultimate motivation. But anyway, so no, it wasn't like a pre-existing passion of mine. It was something I got really into out of necessity.
Right. And I mean, it obviously, but that's something somebody could do, right? I mean, they could get a job and learn how to code or learn a specific aspect of the business and get really, really good at it.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Sorry. I see where you're going with this now.
That's what I was, you know what I mean? Like, because all I'm saying is because from the outside, it might seem like, okay, well, yeah, well, you sold a company for $22 million. So that's easy to say now, but you know what I mean? But it's like, well, it's not, and it's not, that's actually how that happened.
Right.
It's not just that it's easy for me now because you would still be doing the same thing, I think, whether that happened or not.
Yeah. So in my case, the expertise I had built up that everybody needed that made people ask for my help is I had built this little thing to sell my CD at an age before PayPal when building an online shopping cart was really hard and nobody knew how to do it. So nobody had one, but I had one. So now I had something that everybody needed, right? So for everybody listening here, like you've all got your own version of that. Like there is some area in your life where you have an unfair advantage, where you've got access to more experience in a certain field than most people have, or more knowledge of a certain niche of an industry that more people have. And you should focus on those places where you have an unfair advantage, because that's where you're probably most valuable. Let me give another example of this. So when I lived in Singapore, I was really involved with my community and I was just like trying to help mentor, and I kept getting pulled up into the startup scene, which I wasn't really into, but I gave it a shot. Meaning I got involved doing some of those startup competitions where 50 different people come and pitch their business idea and five of them will be winners and get some kind of VC money, right? So 50 people would come in and pitch their business idea. And I swear like 48 out of the 50 ideas were just generic things that had no specialty and no expertise. It was like, hey, we're going to build an app that is going to show you where your friends are eating today. And everybody's going to share where they're eating. And then you'll be able to see where everybody's eating. And that's our idea. And I felt like that's so generic. Like you have no specialty. There's no reason that a bunch of people at Facebook couldn't just build that tomorrow if they wanted to. Like you've got no special insight there. So, but then I remember this one guy came along, I still remember saying, we are going to build software for the small aircraft production process. I said, wait, what? He said, well, small aircraft manufacturers do not have any custom software to help manage the process of manufacturing small aircraft. I said, how do you know this? And he said, my dad is in the small aircraft production business. And he said, and I would watch over his shoulder over the years, and I saw that they're all using Excel spreadsheets and Word documents to manage this complex process of building small aircraft. And since I had a programmer friend and I know a little bit about tech, you know, my friend and I got together and we've asked my dad, like, what would you need to help automate this process and to help streamline this? And my dad told me, and then he introduced me to some of his friends at other companies and we sat down with them. And so we now have built the only software that is available in the world to manage the process of small aircraft production. I was like, holy shit, dude. Fuck yeah, you win. Like you have now found, like you have developed a niche. This is an expertise that everybody is not doing. You have found your unfair advantage. You had an inside insight into this field. And that was like the grand winner of the 50 different startup ideas because he had a niche, an edge. So yeah, if people who ask my advice for, you know, I want to do a startup, but I don't know what I should do, I say, well, just you got to go out into the world and develop some expertise.
And that is like the least sexy startup idea. And that's why it actually makes it so much better.
Yeah, of course.
Everybody wants to create the new web app, right? The new Slack or the new Facebook or whatever it happens to be. But
right. Well, my play. You know,
I made software for small.
Sorry. You know, there's that in the Social Network movie, the line that everybody quotes, you know, $1 million isn't cool. You know what's cool? $1 billion, right? So actually, I feel the opposite. When people are telling me this big generic idea, like we're going to be the next Facebook, I say, you know what? $1 billion isn't cool. You know what's cool? $1 million. Like, don't focus on being a billionaire. Like, how can you make like 1,000 people really happy? Like, you know, even my CD Baby idea. It was taking this completely unserved market. There were a few thousand musicians that were unable to sell their music because nobody anywhere on the internet would sell it for them. Like all the only online record stores at the time were just front ends to the major label distribution system. So if you were an individual musician that had pressed up your own album without a record label, nobody would sell it for you except a guy named Derek in New York. And yeah, I was serving people that had no other solution. And that is so much more satisfying than trying to be everything to everyone or be some big generic service with lots of competition and no special niche, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, Derek, we're going to move to work if we can. I'm hoping you're still working these days, but I guess we'll find out. But first, every blog post right now, every expert talks about the 80-20 rule, right? Do 20% of the work, get 80% of the results. They say, do what you're good at and delegate the rest. At the beginning, you told us what you were good at personally and the one thing that you think in business allows you to your greatest successes. But could you tell something within business that you are absolutely not good at?
Well, for me personally, it's visual design. But I think there's a bigger point here. I mean, this isn't about me. This is about your listeners. So I think sometimes there are more important things than absolute optimization, right? So at CD Baby, well, first, I really enjoyed programming. I love programming. I think it's fascinating. And luckily, it's a useful thing too. I mean, I think learning Mandarin is also fascinating, but it's not really useful to anybody else. It's just, I find it interesting. Hiking and camping is fascinating, but it's not of use to anybody else. But luckily, programming is useful to others. But it's something that I could just hire other programmers to do. And you could say that actually I'm not a great programmer. I'm okay, but there are a ton of people that are better than me. But it's something I love doing. So when people would ask me, like, why don't you outsource that? Why don't you get somebody else, hire somebody else to do the programming? I'd think, well, I might as well just quit then, because I would lose all interest. Like right now, my interest in this is the programming. To me, that is the most creative, inventive part of what I'm doing. And it's kind of like you don't go to the songwriter in a band and say, why don't you just hire somebody else to write the songs for you? You don't go to the lead singer and say, why don't you just hire somebody else to sing for you so you don't have to anymore? You'd say, well, this is what I love doing. Like this is what I want to do. So at CD Baby, I loved doing all the programming. So I never did hire another programmer. I just did it all myself. There was no team. It was just me, right? And same thing with, I ended up enjoying building the computers. So we had 85 employees, which meant we had about 50 PCs in the office and we had a bunch of servers in the business and I built them all myself. I would go down to like Fry's Electronics, you know, whatever your local electronics store. I would buy that beige chassis and buy a hard drive and buy a motherboard and buy a CPU and buy some RAM and whatever and stick it all together and build it myself. And I would install Linux onto it. And I would stay up all night doing this. And I just loved it. It made me so happy. And years later, I remember telling this to somebody who looked at me with this kind of scowl and he went, yeah, that's a good use of the CEO's time. I said, well, yeah, fuck yeah, it is, because that's what I wanted to do. So this isn't about, like, I wasn't trying to please some investors. There were no investors. It was just me. I'm doing this business because I love doing it. So, you know, yes, I could have optimized the business and been more profitable if I would have hired a team of programmers and I could maximize the use of the CEO's time by focusing on sales and building the company. But it wasn't about that. like I was earning enough and I wanted to build PCs because I found it fun and I enjoy programming. So yeah, this 80-20 thing, it's optimize what you want to, but don't forget that while you're doing this, it isn't just for maximum returns.
I fully agree. And I like your songwriter analogy and not outsourcing the songwriting, although the biggest, most popular music in the world, that's all they do.
Right.
Obviously, they pay somebody $5,000 somewhere to write them a song, and then they turn it into a machine.
Exactly. And actually, that's thanks for using that example, because that is a good example. Like, yes, you can get more successful if you hire someone else to do it. Yeah, you could go to the songwriter in the band and say, why don't you hire somebody else to write your songs? The truth is, they probably would get more famous if they would hire somebody else to write the songs. And in fact, you could go to the lead singer and say, hey, you're not that good looking. Why don't you play bass and just hire the best looking person you can find to be the front person? And you'll get more famous that way. And the truth is, yes, you will get more famous if you hire a model to be the singer. But yeah, is that why you're doing this? Is for maximum money? If you are, then that's the correct strategy for you. But if you're not, then it's not.
Exactly. It's the correct strategy for you, but there's no correct strategy. And I love that. And that's why I've never thought of it as this analogy of the songwriter. And to me, it gave me further insight into you as an artist. And your art is the business at that point.
Exactly.
But it's not about optimizing everything. It's not about, I mean, I play drums in two punk rock bands still. Like, I do it because I love it. I do it like nobody, for the most part, cares to listen to that kind of music in the world. That's just how it is. I would never care about being on the radio. That's just not my thing. I just love to play it. I love to do it. I love to bash away really fast on drums, and I'm always going to do it until I can't.
Yeah. Honestly, man, so I have this book out that Seth Godin asked me to write a book and tell my tale. And I said, no, I don't feel a need to tell my tale. And he said, well, can you extract the most important lessons from your tale? And I said, okay, that I can do. That's useful to others. So I have a book out called Anything You Want. It's on Penguin Portfolio Publishing, which means it's out everywhere. Books are sold. And it's a really short read. It's like a 1-hour book that is the kind of stuff we're talking about. It's like the lessons I learned from starting, growing, and then selling my company. Just kind of the 40 little lessons I think people could use for their own pursuits. But yeah, that's the common theme that you'll find behind it is, to me, there's how you design your business is your creative expression. It's like your business, especially if you're talking about making a small business and you're not just doing it to please investors or something. This is where you get to make your little corner of the universe where everything follows your rules and your laws, right? So the fact that most other businesses do things that way doesn't matter here. You do things this way because you want to, and you think this is the way they should be done. And so I think it's extremely creative starting a business, and it's making your own little corner of the universe that follows your rules.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, being an entrepreneur to me is just creating something out of nothing and putting it out into the world.
Yeah.
Waiting for feedback. Hopefully some of that feedback includes monetary feedback in a way that allows you to continue to do it and can do anything you want. That's amazing. And the internet obviously allows us to do that. And your book, I fully 100% endorse it. If there's one person in this world that I could write like, it would be you. And the book it's so short that it's awesome. And I read it on Kindle and I took notes, and the notes are almost as long as the book. So I need to find a way that I can actually take notes now from the notes and slowly just boil it down. But
well, actually, you know what? If you like my style of writing, go find Harry Beckwith, Harry Beckwith, I think Beckwith. He wrote a brilliant little book in the late 90s called Selling the Invisible. And then he followed it up with a few other books in that same vein. And I want to write like Harry Beckwith. And in fact, he's my biggest influence.
Wow.
Writing wise. He's so succinct, got such a friendly, direct style that, yeah, if you like the way I write, I think you'll like Harry Beckwith.
Yeah, no, I love the way you write. And you would be my greatest inspiration to business writing at this point, or writing. And that's the only writing I do, I guess. So, all right, Derek, this has been a lot of fun. I want to wrap up on one thing. It's this thing I'm calling the entrepreneurial gap. And I'd love to know how you're dealing within it right now. So the entrepreneurial gap seems to be this place that we live in as entrepreneurs and dreamers, right? We seem to live in this gap because we're always looking forward, right? Goals are always set into the future, either with new projects we want to start, things we want to achieve and accomplish. And it's always 3 months, 6 months, a year, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years down the road. When I release this book, or when my business does this, or when I accomplish this or stand on this stage, I will be successful. But before we ever get to that point, we seem to set 5 or 10 loftier ones into the future. And we just seem to get stuck in this point where we never reach that level of success that we're always striving for. I agree it needs to be done. We need to set goals and stuff. And that's a whole different thing, though. But you've done a lot of stuff. You've come from music. You've got to, now you get to do what you want based on this business you created, reluctantly, if you wish, or whatever. And you've set yourself up now to get to do things and projects that you want. And as you say no to most things. So I would love right now, Derek, if you could stop right now, turn around and look at everything you've come through, everything you've learned, done, accomplished, and just give me an honest answer of how you feel about everything up till this point.
I'm sorry, I don't, here's the thing, I don't understand the question. So how do I feel about it? How do you mean?
Yeah, about your accomplishments, your everything you've done up till now, not going forward, not what you want to do, but how you've done it up till now.
Well, I think looking back is not very inspiring. You brought up the idea of goals, and I think that one of the biggest lessons I've learned is that the future is just something that we imagine, right? It's actually just, the future isn't something that actually exists. It's just the name that we give to our imagination when we project and try to predict something that we think will happen. We call that the future, but it is really just another name for our imagination. So when people talk about goals that are trying to shape the future, we act like the purpose of a goal is to shape the future. But because the future doesn't exist, all that really exists is the present. And I don't mean to sound foo-foo about that, but more just being like realistic, is a goal is good in as much as that it improves your present actions, right? If you have a future goal that leads you to sit around and do lots of daydreaming, but doesn't make you jump out of your seat and jump into action, well, then that's not a good goal. A good goal is one that would just, in the moment, improves your present actions in a way. So I actually did a lot of looking back. Let's say like when I sold CD Baby, I really felt that feeling that every listener here either already knows or will know at some point in your life, is that feeling that your biggest success is behind you, that you've peaked. Right? So CD Baby was such a success that I felt that my gravestone would say, he made CD Baby and that's about it. And I was 38 years old and I was coming to terms with that feeling of looking back. I think it was something close to depression. I wasn't actually depressed, but something similar to that, where I had no motivation and no inspiration to do anything. I just kind of wanted to get through life and get it over with. In fact, the last couple of years at CD Baby were so bad. I had so much pressure and so much kind of negative energy on me from all of my employees that directed all of their frustrations on me, that I just wanted to change my name and legally disappear just to avoid all responsibility. I even seriously looked into it. I read a couple different books on how to get off the grid, legally change your name and disappear without a trace. And I really looked into doing it. And I think even having a lot of money can really mess with you in a situation like this, because it can lead to absolute lethargy, right? Because there's no more intrinsic motivation. Everything has to be 100% intrinsic motivation. There's nothing you want to buy. There's nowhere you haven't been. If there's something that you want, you just go buy it. You know, if there's somewhere you want to go, you just hop on a plane the next day. You know? So suddenly everything has to be very intrinsically motivated. So yeah, I was spending a lot of time looking back at my career and thinking about what I had done. But I think that's a very uninspiring thing to do. And it led to just lethargy. But then I had these two epiphanies that happened just over the course of a few hours. I was sitting on a plane from LA to New York to go to a friend's wedding. And sitting on that plane, I was reading a book. I think it was probably The 48 Laws of Power by Robert Greene. And he was talking about some historical examples of power and fame, about how being famous is a source of power, that if you can step up to the responsibility of accepting fame, that it can give you the power to do many more useful things to people. And I thought of power in a positive sense. I think the 48 Laws of Power often talks about it in a negative way. But if you think of power as the power to help people, you know, using it in that positive sense of the word, I realized that disappearing, legally changing my name and disappearing and dropping off the grid is not useful to anybody, right? That yes, I had a nice bank account that I could just continue to exist and live and have my heyday be behind me. But if I step up to the responsibilities of being public and being famous, then the benefits are worth the downsides. It's worth the hassle. So in that moment, I got inspired for the first time in like a year. I decided to step up to those responsibilities. And almost immediately afterwards, the second epiphany was having this bigger vision of who I could be. Right? So this is back before TEDx, when there was just TED was just this once a year big giant conference with famous attendees. And to me, being a TED speaker felt like winning a Pulitzer Prize or something. I decided I wanted to do that. Like, that's a goal. I want to speak at TED. And in fact, I've been in the music business so long that what I want to do next is I want to be surrounded with and accepted by a new community of intellectuals and be known as like a writer, speaker, thinker kind of guy. And John, like, suddenly this idea was like, this got me inspired. This got me like sitting upright in my seat and inspired in a way that I hadn't been in a while of looking back. Like, suddenly this was changing my actions in the present moment. And so I started spending like 4 to 6 hours a day just exploring thoughts and finding ways to present them in really short, succinct ways on my blog, editing the hell out of my writing. I mean, I'd spend like 6 hours to write a 4-paragraph blog post, right? But it worked. And I applied to TED and I got accepted to speak, not just once, but at 3 big main stage TED conferences in a row. So finally, kind of to answer your question a bit, the sweetest reward came afterwards when my TED Talks got really popular. And the most common question I would get from all these new people I was meeting was, people would say, so what did you do before TED? And I realized that people didn't know me from CD Baby anymore, that I had successfully done that career pivot that you hear about. To me, it was so reassuring to know it can be done, so much more exciting that, you know, that I agree with your original question that we often do so many things for the future. But I don't know, I'd say that looking back is healthy in small doses, but you need to look at the future in order to improve your present actions.
Yeah. And it's an interesting perspective on my question. I've never, you're making me rethink it. And I agree in ways, like the idea is actually not to look back. The idea is that we live in this gap, which is the present moment, that I think most of us, especially people always trying to build new things and do successful things, we fail to live in the day,
right?
In the moment, in the now, which, as you're saying, is the only thing that exists.
Exactly.
And to me, it's really sad when that's the only thing that exists, yet we never want to exist within it. We always try and exist in the future that doesn't exist, or a past that doesn't exist. So really, it's supposed to be just a moment where you can reflect and then feel how you feel about right now, basically. And that's only what you've done. That's not what you're going to do, because that's meaningless what you're going to do, because we can say we're going to do anything, but it's only what you've done that is you've done up till now.
Right. So I think I took a long roundabout way of answering that, but I still think we're on the same page, is that my point is that the thinking of the future does matter. It's not that you're lost in the future. I don't think it's healthy to just sit around daydreaming about the future, or even sitting around talking about what the future is going to be. But your ideas of where you're going in the future are useful only in as such as they change your present actions. So one idea for my future was to disconnect and disappear and just kind of go off and work on open source software till I die. And another idea for the future was to actually step into this new inspiring reality that I wanted to be. And that was the idea that got me to work for many hours a day and change my present moment and improve my present moment because I was thinking of a different future. So it's these things that you think about, even though they don't exist, are useful if they change your present actions. So it is still living in the present.
It is. Exactly. And you've done an amazing career pivot. And I have to admit that when I first heard about your, I think it was through your blog, and I read it and was into it. And it was several months before I realized that you were the dude from CD Baby. And then I was like, oh my God. And I'm a like musician, right? From the 90s. So I was like, holy man, CD Baby. I never even thought of a founder of that because I wasn't into business when I was at that point, right? I was just a dude in a van playing drums across the country.
Yeah.
But I knew what CD Baby was and we had used it and it was like, wow, that's amazing. And so you're not just that person because I had even been introduced to you by your work after the fact.
Well, even all of that.
And I hope you continue to do more of it.
It's, you know, I really did think that CD Baby was as good as it gets. Like that success is as big as I'll ever have. And then it was, yeah, realizing it, even the fact that you heard of me even the fact that I got inspired to start putting my ass on the line and start publishing all these blog posts came from a different future vision of what I could be doing, you know? So that's, you know, sorry, still back to the entrepreneurial gap that you're talking about, that the legacy we leave behind, that the future we're working towards, like, yeah, all of these things are just little swirling thoughts in your head. They're just memories and just imaginations, but all that really matters is how it changes your present moment.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. All right, Derek, this has been a lot of fun. We've talked about your blog so much. Could you specifically tell the listener where to go find out more about you?
No, I won't tell them where to go. It's a secret. Don't go there. No, okay. Yeah. Sivers.org. Sivers.org is my site. And in fact, anybody that listens to this podcast, especially if you've made it all the way through, is my kind of person. So I'm also just going to give you my email address. Please feel free to introduce yourself. I mean, honestly, I don't do interviews like this to pitch anything. I mean, I think I only make a dollar if somebody buys my book. I don't really care that much about that. And my site is completely non-commercial. So actually the main reason I do interviews like this is to meet the kind of cool people that listen to them. You know, some of the coolest people I've met over the years are people that just found me through things like this. So yeah, if you're listening, please send me a little email and say hello and introduce yourself. My email is Derek, D-E-R-E-K, @sivers.org. And I answer every single email. So feel free to ask me a question or just introduce yourself.
Do it. Take him up on that because he absolutely does respond to them. I've been having conversations now for a year, so it's awesome. And the book, Anything You Want, 40 Lessons for a New Kind of Entrepreneur. Absolutely, absolutely recommend it to everyone. It literally will take you an hour to read, but then it'll take you an hour to reread your notes as well. So it's a 2-hour read, really, but it's more than worth it, more than worth it. All right, Derek, thank you so much.
Thanks, John.
Thank you so much for doing this. And yeah, just keep doing what you're doing because it is really, really awesome and inspiring to watch.
You too. Thanks, John. I appreciate it.
Derek, thank you so much for that conversation. I hope you enjoyed that out there as much as I did. We've been talking for over a year now via email, just trying, he had to get his head right to get back into it and to be willing to do this. And I was so happy when he said he would. And then his new book, Anything You Want, came out and I've read it. I've read it numerous times now and I've read it again. And it's an hour and a half. You can read through it and 40 lessons for a new kind of entrepreneur. And it's the simplicity of it's brilliant. I love the writing. And yeah, I highly, highly, highly recommend it. I absolutely loved going back over this conversation because it was with Derek Sivers and it was just a lot of fun. I was really, really looking forward to it. But as I went through, because I have a crazy amount of notes here, these notes they're kind of hilarious, but they're awesome. And there's so many potential places that I think are worth kind of going back to. But there was this one thing that just stood out to me. It just stood right out and it's it. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
Let's take this idea of people saying like, I'm trying to find my passion and my calling. Well, or maybe thinking that they're not successful because they're not following their passion. But I think that passion is overrated bullshit. I think it's often used as a lame excuse for not doing what's needed, or a sad justification for doing something that people don't want. I think the success of your business has almost nothing to do with you and what you want and your personal passions and preferences. Get over yourself. Forget yourself. This isn't about you. Your business is about them and their needs, like them meaning the people that are going to pay you to do something. Like, this is, your business is all about them.
And that's the hack. Derek. I love this. The whole trying to find my passion or calling, and then taking it even a step further. Passion is completely overrated bullshit. It's an excuse for not stepping up and doing the work that is needed. I love it. It's a harsh truth that I think a lot of people need to admit. This is all the self-awareness. You've got to admit to yourself when you are making excuses for not doing the work that's needed to build the business that your customers want or that somebody in the world needs and can pay you for. And this is absolutely true. It's not, you have to forget about yourself in this sense. It's not, you're not building a business. It's not about you. You're not building a business for yourself. You're building a business maybe around a lifestyle that you want, but you have to serve customers to get that business. That's just how it works. So you can't get so into your own head that you just are not thinking about your customers. And I mean, CD Baby is an amazing example to the point where he didn't want it. He was trying to almost self-sabotage at the end because he just didn't want it getting so big, but it was such a demand in the market and the customers needed it so badly that it had to grow. That's amazing. If you can find that and if you can look for that, look for ways that you can serve your customers and what you can give them. And don't worry about yourself and if it's the thing you're passionate about. This is brilliant. And I thank you so much for that, Derek. All right. This has been a lot of fun. I thank you so very much for joining me again. We've gone a little bit long, but I think it was well worth it. HackTheEntrepreneur.com is the site. Check it out. Get on the email list right at the top. You'll see the place to drop your email in. I write out my best stuff every Sunday. And I have a book coming out in a couple months. December 14th, I believe. That's the date we're working with. Get on that list and you'll be the first one to know. You'll probably even get some sneak previews of it before it goes live. So that'd be great. HackTheEntrepreneur.com and join the email list. Other than that, hope you have a awesome day. Thank you so much for joining me. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.